when she longed to cover her eyes. She wondered if the colder she got, the worse her aversion to sunlight would become. "I slept restlessly," he said, surprisingly confessional. "All my dreams were of Elizabeth." Then he waved over a vampire girl who seemed to be waiting for them by the large wooden staircase to the second floor. She had mahogany brown hair and black leather pants with a deconstructed suit jacket, sections of it sewn inside out with big red stitches. A leather jabot was tied at her throat, and her boots had knives where heels should have been. On her finger was a silver ring with a tooth set in it. As the woman got closer, she wiped the edges of her mouth, bringing up her hand, and Tana saw the tooth was a human molar. "Marisol," he said, and the woman nodded slightly in acknowledgement. "Get the girl cleaned up. Then I want you to bring her to me in my sitting room. She can wear anything of hers, just to make her less ghoulish." The woman looked at Tana and gestured toward the steps. They went to Elizabeth's room together, Tana walking beside Marisol obediently. Her skin felt tight and her teeth sore.
"The bathroom is through there. Just leave your ruined dress on the floor. I'll find something for you in her closet."
Marisol pointedly didn't mention the ball missing from the brass headboard or the pool of saline on the floor. She smiled with a closed mouth, like she was trying not to frighten Tana. Tana looked down at the length of the silk gown she wore. Grass stains and blood. So much blood. She sighed and picked up her clutch from beside the bed as casually as she could, then went into the attached bathroom. The mirror above the sinks reflected her in horrific detail. Dark red gore soiled her face and stained her hands so that she seemed to be wearing smeary opera gloves. She choked back a sob. She didn't look human. She looked like a creature lurching from a grave. She thought of the three vampires she'd seen in Suicide Square, and of Aiden sitting alone in the room on Wormwood Court, mourning what he'd done and afraid of what he might do. She wondered if this was what they saw reflected in the mirror, over and over. Drunks, after a bender, swearing never to let themselves get so out of control again. Drunks who were still thirsty. The memory of her hand driving the screwdriver into the vampire's skin over and over rose up, making her stomach churn. She'd been lost in a haze of panic, and then in a frenzy of hunger, and now, remembering, it felt as if surely another person had been moving her hand. That couldn't have been her squatting over the vampire's body, tearing his ruined throat with her teeth. That couldn't be her reflected in the mirror, her haunted blue eyes in a mask of gore. Turning on the taps in the shower, she let the water run as hot as she could get it. Then she went to the small covered window. The pane was the same gray glass that covered the ceiling in the ballroom, but when she pushed it, the frame slid up, revealing a stretch of roof and letting a sliver of yellow light into the room. Tana set down on the sink counter the keys she'd taken from the vampire she'd killed, rested her solar charger out on the slate, and plugged the cord into her phone. In the shower stall, she watched the brown water spiral around the drain. She scrubbed her skin with Elizabeth's lavender-scented soap, even washed the soap over her tongue, hoping to get rid of that heady, dark flavor that remained in her mouth, reminding her that she would want it again. When she got out and toweled off, she saw that the screen of her phone was alive. She had 80 texts. One from Pearl, some from Pauline or kids at her school, and lots of numbers she didn't know. From Pearl, with a picture of their dad asleep at the kitchen table.
"Everything weird and boring here. You better have fun, 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 and send pics so I can be jealous."
From a girl who'd graduated the year before.
"This is your number, right? Was my brother at the party? Is he with you? Did you see his body? No one will tell us anything."
From a number she didn't know. "You should have died with the rest." From another.
"We're interested in an exclusive interview with you and or your friend Aiden. 5K is on the table if you don't talk to any of the reporters." Tana turned on the sink faucets to make some noise. First, she called Jameson's phone. It went to voicemail again, and she started to wonder if he'd lost it. Pressing her fingers against her eyes, she tried to think. Then she pressed a few buttons and called Pauline. The sound of the familiar ring on the other end made her chest ache.
"Please have your phone with you," Tana mouthed. "Please."
Moments later, there was a clicking sound as someone picked up.
"I'm going to kill you if you're not already undead," Pauline said, her voice making Tana grin despite everything.
"Are you okay? Tell me you're okay."
"Sort of," Tana said, keeping her voice low. "I'm sorry I didn't call. A lot's been going on, and I forgot to charge my phone."
"A lot's been going on?" Pauline repeated, yelling.
"Yeah, I'll say. I saw the video of you last night, with the vampire girl that bit you, and oh my God, Tana. Oh my God, I can't believe you're really calling me, and I'm shouting at you.
I screwed up."
Tana looked at her shiny, clean face in the mirror. That was the problem with monsters. Sometimes they look just like everybody else. But her skin felt wrong. Tight, like it got after a sunburn.
"I really screwed up, and now I'm..."
"You did not screw up," Pauline said. "Listen to me. You survived. You did whatever you had to do to survive. Just tell me, are you a vampire?"
"No,"
Tana said, leaning against the marble counter of the vanity. "I mean, not yet."
"So you're cold? You sound okay."
"For now. I'm trapped in a fancy bathroom in Lucien Moreau's house, and I need to get out of here. Which is why I called. I need you to get a message to someone."
"What?"
Pauline sounded completely confused. "This guy, Jameson, he has a girlfriend who's a vampire, and she lives at Lucien's. I don't know her name, but I could really use her help. And his. I'm going to give you a number. Can you please just call it until you get him? He's got to pick up eventually. Tell him they got Valentina and she's locked up."
Hold on, Pauline said. "I've got to find a pen."
Tana held her breath, listening to the rustling sounds from the other end of the line. It was so normal. So totally normal to call Pauline to get her to do some dumb thing. To call a boy or give her a pep talk or get advice. But Tana couldn't help feeling that the familiarity was what made the moment seem extra surreal now. She stared at her reflection, but this time she seemed to see herself through a funhouse mirror, distorting her face and making the shape of it waver. It took a moment to realize that was because she was looking through the tears in her eyes.
"I found a pen," Pauline said. "Go."
Tana read Jameson's number off her own phone.
"That's Jameson. Tell him Valentina is locked up in the basement of Lucien's, and I'm going to try to get her out tonight, just after dark.
If, during the day, he could possibly take some bolt cutters to the side fence at Lucien's so we can slip through there, that would be amazing. And if he can't, tell him not to worry. We'll figure it out."
"Tell him not to worry?" Pauline repeated back.
From the other side of the wall, Marisol called,
"Lucien's waiting. Time to get dressed."
"I've gotta go," Tana said.
"Tell Pearl I love her."
"I love you," said Pauline. "So stay safe, okay?"
"Hey, so what's the status of you and David?" Tana asked.
"Oh, shut up," Pauline laughed, and then her voice wobbled. "Don't die, and I'll tell you the whole story."
Smiling, Tana hit the end button on her phone and put it back on the sill. Then she glanced at herself in the mirror. To her horror, her front teeth were scarlet. She ran her tongue over her gums, tasting the salt of her own blood. Maybe she'd bitten her tongue? Leaning over the sink and cupping her shaking hands, she scooped up water from the faucet, took a mouthful, swished it around, and spat red. Then she snarled at the mirror. And with the blood gone, she could see that her gums were bleeding because her canines had grown longer. They weren't as thin or sharp as vampire teeth, but they were no longer quite human teeth either.
"Marisol?"
she called in a high, scared voice she didn't even recognize as her own.
Aiden had drunk Gabriel's blood and nothing had happened to him. What was happening to her? A moment later, the vampire came into the room, her nostrils flaring at the smell of blood. Her red eyes studied Tana's reflection in the mirror.
What now?
Look at my teeth, Tana said in a quavering voice, pulling the towel around herself more tightly. The vampire grabbed Tana's head, tilting it back and then reaching into her mouth to press a finger against the points of her teeth. Marisol stepped back and shook her head.
Someone gave you a belly full of vampire blood, I'll wager. You're going to be fine. It's the way vampires used to be turned before the world fell. They'd be fed on vampire blood until they were ready. Sometimes it would take weeks to get to the stage you're at. You must have drunk quite a lot.
She had. But what does it mean? Tana asked, her fingers going to her teeth unconsciously. Am I going to die? Am I going to turn?
No, Marisol said. It just means that you're ready to die. You'll be stronger once you're turned.
Tana nodded, trying to calm herself. Nothing was wrong. She wasn't going to wake up a vampire. Not today, anyway. It was just a symptom of infection. A symptom she'd never heard of before, admittedly, but a symptom all the same. More toxins, she remembered from the speaker at school. An accumulation of toxins.
Okay,
said Tana, taking a deep breath and walking past Marisol into the bedroom. She couldn't let herself seem weak. Forget about it. I'm fine. Let's go show off my new teeth to Lucien Moreau. A few minutes later, not having liked anything Marisol picked out, Tana dressed in the least formal thing she managed to find, a dark red, sleeveless leather dress, and followed Marisol through the halls. Not a single one of Elizabeth's shoes fit even a little, for which she was obscurely glad. It was creepy enough that her clothing fit so well. The leather dress hugged her skin, stretching tight across her hips. Tana's black hair was pulled back into a high ponytail, and Gabriel's necklace still sparkled on her collarbone. As she walked, her tongue traced the points of her longer canines. Marisol turned the knob of a lacquered black door and indicated Tana should enter, but she didn't move to follow. The door closed behind Tana as she padded across the floor as lightly as she could in bare feet. Heavy drapes covered the windows. Lucien walked toward her as though he saw perfectly, even through the gloom. In the room, there were two black leather chairs and a desk carved with griffins at each of the four corners. Tana spotted a key ring of bone, scrimshawed with an image she couldn't make out, resting atop it. Three keys hung from the ring. She'd gotten only two keys from the vampire she killed. She hoped they were the right two.
You clean up nicely, Lucien said. But you're younger than I thought. How old are you exactly?
Tana wasn't sure if she should thank him or not. She decided not.
17.
I didn't believe you at first, he went on. When you told me Gabriel had given you the garnets, I was baffled as to why he would have given them to a mortal girl.
Did he tell you about it?
The necklace.
He said it belonged to his sister, said Tana.
She walked over to one of the chairs but didn't sit. Lucien frightened her and fascinated her, too. She was a guest in his house, but she was also a prisoner.
Lucien snorted. Yes, it certainly did. But that's when I knew. That's when I saw the necklace around your throat.
He came here to die. He must have. That's the only reason I could think of that he would give it away to anyone, even to someone for whom he has such an inexplicable fondness. Did you know his sister was wearing it the night she decided her brother was dead? She believed Gabriel to be some kind of demon, a fetch who'd stolen his face. She tried to run away from him and he grabbed for her, but all he caught was the necklace. It broke, and he never saw his sister again.
That's sad, Tana said.
It was a little bit funny, actually.
said Lucian. I mean, they were shouting at each other like they were idiot children. And then a man came to defend her honor. I think he was a cabbie, but he had several friends right behind him. Imagine, a vampire giving up in the face of a few dirty men on a street. It was as if Gabriel had entirely forgotten what he was. Tana had no idea what to say to that. And he never tried to find her? She asked, finally. Lucian smiled, all teeth.
I found her first, you see. It's an old story, but you might as well hear it. I thought I could make things right between them. That once she'd turned, Gabriel would be entirely happy. Katya was clever and capable. She'd made it out of Russia all on her own. So, anyway, I brought over one of my footmen. 6 foot and fair of face, perfect for a lady. I sent up my card and she agreed to see me. She had one of those older, destitute spinsters who hired themselves out as chaperones. I killed her immediately. Tana took a breath and let it out slowly, trying to find some way to accept that he'd cheerfully announced murdering an innocent woman 100 years ago. Dizzily, she sat down in one of the chairs, deciding that she no longer cared about manners. Lucian grinned down at her. He appeared to be enjoying himself, as though this was a favorite story that he seldom got to tell. Katya was upset, of course, and even more upset when I grabbed her and sank my teeth into her throat. When I let her go, she started more of her babbling about demons. But whatever she thought was going to happen, I'll wager she never imagined the hunger that would overtake her half a day later. She never guessed how she would take a letter opener to my poor, ruined footman's throat. And do you know what she did after that? The stupid girl walked right out into the sun as soon as she rose from the dead. She killed herself? Gabriel had smiled when he'd talked about Katya in Paris. Surely he wouldn't have happily reminisced about circumstances that led to her death if he'd known. But if Gabriel didn't know, why would Lucian tell Tana? Gabriel was quite put out by it when he discovered what I'd done, even though I had arranged the whole thing for him. It was going to be a nice surprise, a family reunion. Lucian shook his head regretfully. She really was a pistol, his sister. Stubborn like him and just as melodramatic. He's not... Tana began, but she let the sentence trail off. He was melodramatic sometimes, and it wasn't as if Lucian hadn't known him for a very long while, certainly long enough to make statements like that. Ah, said Lucian. How sweet. I have been terribly curious. How did you manage to catch his eye?
Ladies tried, but he was so often distracted, always putting down outbreaks and sharpening his knives. All that hunting made him a little jittery, I think. Rather off-putting for all but the most dauntless ladies. Are you dauntless, my dear?
Tana did not know what to say to that.
I have no idea.
It's all some wicked game to him, she realized. Getting under her skin. Passing on a story to her that might or might not be true, but would rattle her and keep her off balance. Lucian liked to be the endless drip of water wearing on someone's soul. Lucian liked to watch people snap.
I suppose it doesn't matter.
He threw himself into the chair opposite Tana.
What matters is that you managed to make him care about you.
And now you're going to get everything you ever dreamed of. Becoming a vampire. Becoming famous. Not bad. For an opportunistic little slut, you sure landed in clover.
Tana flinched at the casual way the insult rolled off his tongue.
Oh, no, I congratulate you, truly. If I had a drink in my hand, I would toast my admiration.
Good thing I don't have one, said Tana, because I'd throw it in your face. He tossed back his head and laughed.
I just love mortals.
I bet, she told him. He acknowledged her words with a nod.
It's such a relief not to have to hide anymore. Before the infection spread, we were already known by our mistakes. Vampur in the Netherlands, Upir in the Ukraine, Vrikolagas in the Balkan region, Penangrelang on the Malay Peninsula. If we'd been better at hiding, there would have been no words for us. But there is a word for vampire in every corner of the world. And no black cloaks with red linings. Well, maybe still those, but definitely not the kind with stand-up collars. Tana should probably stop talking like that. But she needed to prove to both of them that she wasn't scared, even if she was. He ignored her, unwilling to be baited and definitely unsmiling.
And now the world sees our true faces.
It is remade by us into something glorious, something where men aspire to be immortal. I like this world, and I would keep it moving forward, unlike the ancient vampires. Their dream of returning to the old ways is like the Romanovs' dream of a return to power. It won't happen, no matter how much they cackle about it in their crypts and catacombs. But with the spider nearly to my gates, our interests align.
What do you mean? She asked.
Whatever the spider did to Gabriel seems to have unhinged his mind. What they used to call manie sans délire, insanity without delusion. He's broken, and we are without the time to put him back together. Help me control him, and I will help you. No more making you drink cold, dead blood in front of a cage full of delicious girls and boys. I'll turn you, Tana. I'll show you how to be a vampire, the likes of which the world has seldom known.
You will? She asked, thinking of her newly sharp teeth, of the way her dizzying hunger had deserted her since she'd fed. Lucian must know what was happening to her, how the vampire's blood was making her stronger, but he was obviously pretending he didn't.
Cold, dead, yucky blood. Don't drink any more of that.
Sabotage disguised as kindness.
In Paris, there was once a legendary delicacy, now outlawed, Lucian was saying. A bird called an ortolan. An unremarkable-looking creature with a grayish-green head and a yellow body is caught alive and force-fed millet until it grows fat. Then it's drowned in Armagnac. Finally, the bird is roasted and eaten whole, bones and beak and all, while the diner wears a napkin over his head. Some say that's to keep in the aroma of the dish. Others say it's to hide the diner's face and his shame from heaven.
That's cruel, Tana said.
Yes, said Lucian, truly. And yet even that is nothing to the fineness of human blood. Do you know what it is to drink it down, hot and metallic, pumped into your mouth by the frantic heartbeats of a quivering body? It's half like spitting in the face of God, half like being him.
Tana shook her head, hunger rising despite herself.
You make it sound pretty good.
Well, Lucian said, with a small smile,
if there's anything that spits in the face of God, I'm generally for it.
What do I have to do? She asked.
Just make sure Gabriel sticks to the plan, remembers the plan even. Decides he'll live after all. Continues to recall that the spider is our enemy and that I am his ally. Do you understand? You may not believe me, but I have loved him in my way. What happened to him is my fault. I bear that responsibility. But it will be easier to bear with the spider dead. And it will be easier for him to bear what's happened to him with you at our side. Since I want his happiness, I also must want yours.
Tana nodded slowly. I'll do what I can, she told him. He was standing closer than she'd expected. Tana hadn't heard him move. She shuddered as his hand came up to cup her cheek. His fingers curled against her, tips pressing against the bone hard enough to bruise. Good, good. We never know what we're capable of until we try. Chapter 32. The devil tempts us not. 'Tis we who tempt him, beckoning his skill with opportunity. George Eliot. 8 years before, Gabriel came apart. First, the spider cut open his belly. Then he took out his guts and knotted them around the bars of his cage. Ropey blue garlands. They gouged out his pomegranate seed eyes. They fed him fouled blood and bile and his own skin. They cut him with knives, flogged him with razor-tipped whips, and drove rusty nails into the soles of his feet. When he healed, they did it again, until everything hurt all the time, forever. Pain so vast and terrible and huge, it blotted out thought. And so when he came back to himself, his memories were disjointed. He'd ripped out someone's throat, but he was no longer sure whose. There'd been blood everywhere. He'd slipped in it, clotted like soured milk. There was hair, too, a nest of it in a drain. And he remembered who had urged on his tormentors, the face of the creature who smiled down at him. I could tell you, Gabriel thought. I could give you someone else in my place. Someone you'd like better. Someone you'd hurt worse. But no. They'd taken every other piece of him. He would hold on to revenge. It would be his fairy story, his lullaby, sung softly by flayed lips, off-key and deranged. Chapter 33. A thinking woman sleeps with monsters. Adrian Rich. Tana walked down the hallway behind Lucian, past the oil paintings of landscapes in the French countryside and gory handprints. They came to a heavy oaken door. Lucian was reaching for the knob when the door opened wide. Gabriel was framed in the opening. He had on the black jeans and black shirt he'd worn on their road trip, although they had a softness to them that suggested they'd been freshly laundered. His feet were bare. Stepping back, he waved them inside. See, I've returned her, Lucian said, giving Tana a push against the small of her back, so she was forced to stumble into the room. Unharmed, undebauched. Tana scowled. You really are from another time, aren't you? Ignoring her, Lucian crossed the threshold, closing the door behind him. We need to talk, my dear. All three of us? Gabriel asked archly. She's your guest. We should entertain her and keep an eye on her. According to you, she's killed two vampires in the span of a single day, really. I should have never been left alone with her. She must be very dangerous. Lucian's smile didn't reach his eyes. He drew out from a pocket a folding knife with a handle of bone and began to pick underneath his fingernails with the point, scraping out flakes of dried blood and bits of tissue. She noticed there was something wrong with the way his nails curved, as though his fingers were tapering into claws. You're right. I never should have, Gabriel said, turning to Tana with a half-smile just for her. More dangerous than daybreak. She wondered if he remembered that he'd said those words. But right then, she didn't feel dangerous at all. She felt revolted and very, very afraid. She looked around the room, trying to get her bearings. The windows were the same gray glass, and the sun still blazed outside, making them glow, although she no longer had a sense of time. It might have been late afternoon or early evening. On the floor beside the bed was a leather duffel, several knives spilling out of it. She wondered where Gabriel had stashed it before his confrontation with Lucien. The room was large enough for the four-poster bed at its center and the settee along one wall, its upholstery a shining black patent leather. Above it hung a painting, a meticulous study of a human heart crawling with maggots on a silver plate. It reminded Tana of her art teacher, and she wondered suddenly if it could be one of his pieces. She should take a picture and text it to Mr. Olson, she thought. But that just made her imagine Lucien and Gabriel posing on either side of it, glowering at each other. And from there, hysteria threatened to crawl up her throat and force a giggle out of her. That was the worst part. She could plan and she could make herself keep going, but she couldn't control when her brain overloaded on horror and threatened to shut down spectacularly in a sputter of hysterical laughter. She felt as if she were teetering at the very edge of what she could handle, and if she started laughing now, she wouldn't stop. Lucien crossed the room and flopped down on the settee, sprawling out, showing exactly how comfortable he was in Gabriel's bedroom. Which made sense, since they were, after all, in his home. He continued carving the underside of his nails with the knife, picking loose the last of what darkened them. The more she looked at him, the more she realized that some of his blonde hair was stained with blood, too, toward the back of his head, where he probably couldn't see it. On the cameras, it would read as nothing, a blur. She wanted to laugh again, which was ridiculous, because none of this was funny. Tana perched on the corner of the mattress. When Gabriel looked over at her, she couldn't quite meet his gaze. She remembered how he'd watched her with the vampire in the basement, seen her stained mouth and her red teeth. What had he thought of her? She'd fallen a long way from the nice girl who offered him a ride in the trunk of her car. No, not funny in the least.
"So," said Lucien, "the spider's advance guard, his corps de ténèbres, is coming tonight at dusk. The spider himself will come later in the evening when everything has been arranged for him. We don't have much time for preparations and only one chance for this plan to work." The casual way he spoke of the spider's arrival, as though coming and going from Cold Town for vampires like the spider or Lucien or Elizabeth, was as simple as crossing any other border, was alarming. She wondered if the only creatures really stuck inside the city were humans. No, she thought. Humans and vampires created after Casper. Gabriel ran pale fingers through the mess of his black hair, an oddly human habit. He cut his gaze toward Tana and then back to Lucien.
"Just let me get close enough and I'll kill him. Don't doubt that."
"The chains would have to be real," Lucien said. "He, above all others, knows what will hold you and what won't. I'll have to use heavy steel, but we can loosen a few links. Understand? It will all have to seem very, very real."
"Yes," Gabriel said, so softly that it was almost an exhalation of breath. "And there must be some sign of struggle. Marks on my body and face as though we really fought."
Lucien's lips pulled back from his teeth in an expression that was half smile and half snarl.
"What is the plan, exactly?" Tana asked.
Lucien glanced at her in annoyance before his face very deliberately smoothed out. Maybe he'd realized that she couldn't help Gabriel stick to a plan she didn't understand. Or maybe he'd remembered he was trying to make her like him.
"It's simple, really," he said, waving a hand in Gabriel's direction. "The spider is going to come pick up his prize. We're going to truss up Gabriel, and when the spider gets close enough, and he won't be able to resist gloating, Gabriel will pull free from the restraints and kill him."
Gabriel nodded his agreement.
"And then Lucien's people will fall upon his core.
And thus will the new world triumph over the old," finished Lucien.
"Nice," Tana said, feeling as though she ought to say something. but also as though everything she thought of seemed insufficient. That odd feeling of the surreal descended on her again. Some vampires were going to murder some other vampires. Lucien and Gabriel, best vampire frenemies, were going to murder some other vampires. She put her hand in front of her mouth, smothering a smile. Once upon a time, she and Pauline had had a big falling out over a leather jacket that Tana had borrowed, and their mutual friend Anna puked on. There had been a huge screaming fight, and then avoiding each other for a week, eating lunch at different tables and upsetting their mutual friends with their endless snarking. But then Pauline got cast as a lead in a play and turned up at Tana's house to run lines. The fight was over, just like that. Could Gabriel feel that way about Lucien, though? Was it possible to forgive someone who caused the death of his sister, whose necklace he'd carried with him for more than a century? Was it possible to forgive someone whose fault it was that he'd been locked in a cell and lost his mind? Lucien stood up and started toward the door. Quietly, Gabriel spoke, mouth curling up at one corner. "There is one more thing I would say to you." Lucien turned, and something about Gabriel froze him in place. "You won't betray me," Gabriel said. "But can you tell me the reason why?" "Because I know you can kill him, and I want him dead," Lucien frowned, speaking slowly as if to a child. "You specialize in killing our own kind, and I want the spider gone. He hates vampires who display themselves before mortals. Vampires like me, who've become celebrities. So you're giving me what I want at a very small cost to myself. Besides which, you are my progeny, of which I am most proud." Gabriel smiled. "No, you won't betray me, because if you do, I will tell the spider your secret. I know why you gave me over to him so swiftly. I didn't realize at first, but being in a cage for a decade gives one a long time to think." Lucien glanced up at the wall, above a painting, and then back. It was only a moment's change of gaze, but when Tana followed it, she saw the tiny glare of a camera lens. Of course he was recording Gabriel. Of course. It couldn't be part of the live feed, though. Not if Lucien was casually discussing secrets. Unless Lucien was betraying Gabriel in the most obvious way possible, literally broadcasting their plan to the spider. But even though the footage was likely to be hidden away in Lucian's vault somewhere, he looked nervous, as though he didn't want whatever Gabriel was about to say on a recording of any kind. Gabriel turned toward Tana and directed the next part to her. He sounded chillingly sane. "Long ago, no new vampires could be turned without the approval of a small number of very old vampires. They pretended that they were worried about the spread of vampirism, but what they mostly worried about was one of their own progeny making an army and moving against them. As a thorn, I hunted any progeny that stepped out of line, but what I mostly hunted were mistakes. Some vampires are foolish or sloppy. Some are interrupted in the middle of feeding, surprised by sunlight, or even fought off by the person being attacked. That victim goes cold, turns, then not knowing any better, feeds without killing. She probably tries to feed without killing, but in the process she makes more vampires, and soon it's an outbreak. Tana couldn't help imagining Gabriel being interrupted by some frantic vampire, waving around her hands, trying to explain the terrible errors he just made. A laugh threatened to bubble up in Tana's throat again. "Casper Morales was different," said Gabriel. At his name, Lucien stiffened. "He didn't remember who turned him, only that he'd had a feeling of being followed and then was surprised, alone in an alley. He woke up in his own house with the shades drawn. On the wall, in blood, someone had written, "Tell Death hello." It was though someone turned him for a prank. Lucian stayed very still.
"Who would do that?"
he asked finally, his tone flat. Gabriel turned back to her, and Tana suddenly realized that she was playing the role of the jury.
"I killed 5 black-haired and dark-eyed vampires in the month before. All of them with something in their features that made them look, from a distance, as though they could have been kin to me. 3 women and 2 men. All of them with an odd story about how they were turned. All with faces that spoke to me of my brother, my sister, and the clothes they wore. Oddly antique, as though someone had set the outfits out for them. The jewelry, too. It was uncanny. One of the boys even had a useless old dueling pistol. Tedium is the worst enemy of those that live forever. We all have ways to amuse ourselves, and Lucians are often, how shall I say it, petty." Tana shivered. The chill of infection was creeping back into her skin, but she could still ignore it.
"All right," Lucian said. "Enough."
"It was like murdering ghosts over and over again," Gabriel said. "I couldn't do it that last time. I let Caspar go. I let him go. But I was not the one who turned him. You did that, Lucian. You turned all of them to see what I would do, because it made you laugh to be cruel. And the reason you won't betray me, Lucian, is that if you do, I will tell my story to the spider, and you will spend the next decade in a cage by my side." Tana looked at them both, and for a moment the enormity of what Gabriel had said went washing over her. He was saying that the end of the world wasn't an accident. It was a joke.
"You have no proof," Lucian said.
"Only a story." Gabriel shrugged.
"If you really believed that, why would you have kept this secret for so long?"
Lucian's body vibrated with manic, suppressed energy. His arrogant mouth trembled. He was afraid, Tana realized. Afraid of what the spider would do to him if he knew. Maybe afraid of all the other ancient vampires, cheated out of their old world, banding together and ripping him apart as they had done to Caspar Morales. Maybe even afraid of humans, or at least human governments finally having one person to blame. No wonder Lucian had praised Gabriel for changing the world. Every time Lucian praised him, he was really praising himself. But being afraid made him dangerous. Tana could see the repressed violence in his face, could see the fresh hate glittering in his red eyes. If Gabriel thought that showing Lucian the power he had over him would ensure his loyalty, Gabriel was wrong.
"I kept your secret because I liked the thought of you free," Gabriel said.
Lucian crossed the room abruptly, as if he could not bear to hear any more. He opened the door to the hall.
"After tonight, we'll both be free. We'll be free forever, so long as you don't screw it up."
He slammed his way out, making the wall shake. Gabriel flopped down on the settee and put both hands over his face. Then he looked at her with his strange eyes.
"Lord, but you must despise me."
She slid off the mattress, shaking her head.
"I'm better now," he said. "Sometimes I am, anyway. Before, it was like being in a dream. I couldn't put everything straight. It got muddled and messy, and now I see how horrifying it must have been. How horrifying it must all be."
"Was what you said, it would take a river of blood to wash away all my wounds. I saw a video of you the other night. You appeared to be taking all your medicine at once, so I guess that helped. I'm glad." She remembered him bent over the girl's throat, balancing his knee on the edge of her chair,
covering her body with his. A shudder went through her that wasn't fear.
I really said that?
He asked.
It sounds a bit mad.
Tana laughed, perching on the arm of the settee. He reached out with cold fingers and dragged her down next to him in a surprisingly human gesture. She let herself slip onto the cushion, her head falling against his shoulder.
How are you?
He asked softly.
Well, Tana said, every new outfit I get I manage to ruin within a few hours.
His grin was immediate, his gaze going to her dress and then away.
Leather wipes down.
Resting there, smiling, his arm around her, felt a little like being out on a very dangerous date. She thought about the way he'd kissed her, with blood in her mouth and the sun rising behind her, and wondered if he wanted to kiss her again.
So, you think this plan is going to work? She asked suddenly, desperately needing to fill the silence.
You really trust Lucian?
How do you get the cat to bat at a string? Gabriel whispered against her hair.
I don't know, she said, shivering.
Drag it past really slow?
Exactly, he told her, his cool fingers running over the arc of her cheek. He watched his own hand in fascination, as though he was surprised by what it was doing.
And if that doesn't work, drag the string over the cat. You don't show what you can really do with the string. You don't start with jerking it up into the air or moving it incredibly fast. That comes later. First, you let the cat catch it. And if the cat gets it once, the cat wants to get it again.
Like you're going to let the spider think he's caught you. Her voice came out a bit breathless. He shrugged.
It's funny to watch them when the string is in the air and they're hanging on, paws off the ground. It's funny to watch them dance. They'll run right into walls to get that string back.
Tana pulled away from him a moment, regarding him seriously. He was all lush mouth and drowning eyes, all pretty monster reclining on leather cushions, but she'd seen the expression on his face before Lucian left. He's been messing with your head a long time. Aren't you worried that he's manipulating you, Gabriel? She glanced up at the shining spot where the camera was. They were directly beneath it, which might mean that they might not show up on the film, but she was sure her voice would. If Lucian heard it, he'd know she never had any intention of helping him.
I'm not sure it matters anymore. But will you do this one thing for me? Will you lock your door tonight and stay inside until dawn, no matter what you hear?
Tana took a shaky breath. That was the one thing that she couldn't promise him. Not if she wanted to help Valentina. Not if she wanted Jameson's help.
Okay,
she lied. He looked worryingly relieved.
Then let me tell you a story while we wait for dusk to fall. When I was a boy, there was a woman who looked after my brother and me. She told us tales of firebirds and witches, and about the warrior princess called Maria Morevna, who Prince Ivan married. Ivan was all alone, since he'd given his blessing for his first sister to marry a falcon, his second sister to marry an eagle, and the third to marry a raven.
They married birds? Tana echoed. Not really so much for the answer as to show she was listening, and to make him smile.
Birds who were sometimes men, Gabriel told her. When Ivan saw Maria Morevna's fierceness in battle and her beauty, he fell instantly in love. They were married soon after. But warrior princesses are very busy. So soon, Maria Morevna had to invade somewhere or battle somebody, and left Ivan in charge of her kingdom. He had piles of gold and very good caviar and everything anyone could want. Except for one thing. She implored him never to go into a single chamber under the palace. Tana thought of her own feet on the dusty steps leading down to her basement, and to her mother waiting in the dark. He did, though, didn't he? Leaning in, she rested her head against his chest, closing her eyes. He couldn't resist. Gabriel's accent deepened as he spoke. And there, chained with 12 strong chains, was Cochet the Deathless. And Cochet said, "Please, I'm so thirsty. Pity me and give me some water. I have been locked away here for 10 years, suffering torments you cannot imagine. My throat is so dry."
"Is this a real story?" Tana interrupted, thinking of Gabriel's own decade of torment, of his own thirst. But the vampire only laughed. "A very famous one, I swear it. Anyway, Ivan is a kindly soul and brings Cachet water, but his thirst could not be quenched with a single bucketful, nor with a second bucketful. But when Ivan brought Cachet the third bucketful of water, Cachet was restored to his full strength and broke his chains." "The sin of mercy," Tana said. Gabriel looked a little embarrassed and a little pleased that she'd remembered. "Yes," he said softly, cool fingers resting against the skin of her bare shoulder, distracting her. "Ivan was merciful, and all the rest of the story is how he paid for it. Cochet kidnapped Maria Morevna and took her away to his own palace, leaving Ivan to chase after them. 3 times he was able to find Maria Morevna, and 3 times was able to run away with her. But Cochet had a magical horse faster than the wind. The first time Cochet caught Ivan, out of gratitude for the water he'd been given, he let Ivan go with a warning that if he was caught again, he'd be chopped into pieces. The second time Cochet caught Ivan, he let him go with the same fearsome warning. The 3rd time Cochet caught Ivan, he made good on his threats. He chopped Ivan into 13 pieces with his sword, put the pieces into a tarred barrel, and threw the barrel into the sea. But the falcon, the eagle, and the raven who had married Ivan's sisters fished it out again. They took the pieces of Ivan's body and laid them on the ground like a puzzle. Once they'd put him back together, they sprinkled his body with water and he woke up again, as from a deep sleep. So he was undead? Tana asked.
Like a vampire?
Something like that. He woke up smarter, too, because this time he went to the witch Baba Yaga and won a horse as fine and fast as Cachet's. With it, he ran away to Maria Morevna 1 final time. Cachet chased them on his magical horse, but this time when he caught up, Ivan's horse struck Cachet a mighty blow, smashing his skull. Then Ivan and Maria Morevna built a pyre and burned Cachet until he was ash. And then they lived happily, visiting each of Ivan's sisters and their bird husbands, all of whom declared that Ivan did the right thing to risk so much for a woman as beautiful and fierce as Maria Morevna.
If she was so fierce, how come she didn't just save herself? Tana asked.
But that's the interesting thing about the story, don't you think? Gabriel asked, with an intensity that belied it just being a story to him. I loved it when I was a child, but as I got older, I started to wonder. Was it fair for Maria Morevna to lock away Cachet for 10 long years without even water? And if it was fair for her, wasn't it just as fair for him to spirit her away to his castle? But Ivan, he's good. He's kind. He'd give a prisoner water. And he might not know how to save his wife, but he manages to do the impossible purely by not giving up. He is the chaotic part of the story, because he doesn't do what everyone expects of him.
When I was a child, I thought of myself as like Ivan, but no. You are more like Ivan than I ever was. You expected me to be good, and because of you, I tried. He closed his eyes. In the end, though, we both know I will be cachet in the story. And that's why you should get away from me as fast as you can and keep going. Even my love is monstrous, Tana. I will keep on frightening you, and you're not some fairy tale character. She caught his chin and turned his face toward her, so that when he opened his otherworldly eyes again, she could look into them without flinching, so she could show him she meant it. And I'm not even sure what I am. But I know you. Maybe I didn't spend decades with you like Lucian did, but I bet I can make you laugh faster than he could. Oh, really? He tilted his head to one side, and it was hard for her not to stare too long at the softness of his mouth. She wanted to trace the swell of it. She leaned close, heart hammering, and licked his cheek instead. For a moment, he looked startled, and then he did laugh. Real, honest, helpless laughter at the sheer ridiculousness of what she'd done. You're yourself, Tana said, grinning. More purely yourself than anyone I know. And if you can't see who that is anymore, then see yourself the way I see you. Gabriel shook his head. You can't know what I am. She interrupted him, talking fast. When I was about to turn 14, my dad sent me to sleepaway camp. Maybe you don't know what that is, but it's usually for a couple of weeks in the summer, and you... He pressed his hand to his chest in mock affront. I've been locked away for 10 years, not 10,000. Fine, well, okay, she said. Anyway, I had these ideas about who I was when I left. I had about 100 stuffed animals that my grandparents had given me over the years, all of them piled up on my bed. And I had 2 best friends, Nicole and Amber. Amber lived down the street from me, and we'd been friends since basically forever. Nicole had moved to town later and gotten really close to Amber when I was in the hospital. So it was always the 3 of us, and we'd ride our bikes around town together and watch movies in one another's rooms. In friendships, everybody has roles. I was the one who worried we'd get in trouble if we markered up the Macy's bathroom in the mall or stole a pair of feather earrings from a Claire's boutique. The one who always did what she was told. The shy one. The scared one. The goody-goody. That was the way I'd been at 9 and 10 and 11 and 12, so I never noticed that it wasn't the way I was anymore at 13. He ran cool fingers over the scarred skin of her arm, and for a moment she was too spellbound to go on. I think you had reason to be scared, he said. Maybe. But the thing is that when I got to that camp, no one knew me. And by the time I went home, I saw myself differently. There I had been the first one to swim all the way across the lake. When the sink backed up, I took apart the pipes and fixed it. I nearly killed some poor kid from the boys' cabins who tried to scare us by pretending to be a vampire. I'll bet, Gabriel said dryly. Laugh it up, she told him. But the thing is, I hadn't known myself at all until I went away. I knew how Nicole and Amber saw me. And Lucian and Spider and all the others, they're afraid of you. So they figure you must be pretty awful indeed. They think you can't feel anything because they've forgotten how. You're very, very dangerous, I get that. And you're prone to some very theatrical brooding. But don't let yourself mistake that for some kind of inner corruption. They see themselves in you and are blinded. He leaned toward her, gazing into her face as though some great secret swam in her eyes, his hands drawing her closer, his mouth parting slightly, showing the very tips of his canines as he bent toward her, eyes hooded. And what do you see? A shudder went through her, the chill of infection racing through her veins.
He pulled back, as though he'd been scorched. His lips were still apart,